what I just did is this is an MP3 recorder, and it's going to pick up all the audio in the room. So don't slander your principals or anything like that, okay? Or anybody. And when the session's over, I'm going to take that audio and I'm going to archive it online. You know what I'm talking about. I'm going to archive it online, and you will be able to access everything that we talk about. If you want to hear it over again, or fast forward through the boring parts and get to the good stuff, then you can do that too. All the slides will also be available free online. And over the weekend, any links that we end up talking about today, I'll collate them and I'll put them there on the webpage. So you really don't need to take any notes, right? Just enjoy, get engaged, let's dig in and have some fun together, okay? And I'll share the website with you before we go, okay? One link that you'll need. This book, How People Learn, they did some serious research into how people learn three subject areas in particular in this study. They looked at science and mathematics and history. And what they found was that there were basically three principles, actually four, but I'm going to talk about the three main ones that they talk about in the book. That it turns out that if you want to teach effectively, this is the way kids learn those particular domains. Okay? So I'm going to be referencing that as we go through this. The first thing that I want to talk about is when I'm trying to think about, okay, here's this lesson that I used to do, and I want to kind of give it a bit of a facelift. The first thing when I'm teaching something is what I want the lesson to be when I'm done is I want to create a gallery of the kids' thoughts, like the thinking that they were doing as they were learning that lesson. I want to get some insight into what's going on inside their heads, because you really can't tell. Like, you talk to them in the classroom, and what's going on behind their eyes? Like, do they understand? Are they just sitting there soaking it up, or are they not? You know, it's hard to tell. So one of the things that I want to do with these kinds of lessons is I want them to be some way for the kids to share what their thinking and their thought processes are. And that's going to tie into the first principle too, because in doing that, it ties into the kids' preconceptions. This was the first principle from that study, that the teachers should engage kids' preconceptions. Like, when you're teaching something, what are the misconceptions that they might bring to this stuff that we're about to learn? And the example I've got here is, I can't help it, I'm a math teacher, so with fractions, kids think that when you multiply numbers, the answer's always going to be bigger than what you started off with. So then they look at, you know, fractions whale them. They look at something like a half times three, and they see the two, the three, the answer's got to be bigger, so there's a two and a three, it's got to be six. So that's one of the ideas that I might think about when I'm talking about fractions. That's just an example. Like, whatever it is you're teaching, ask yourself, what are the kids bringing to the table before you start? And you want to be able to see that stuff, see that thinking. The second thing is that I want, when I'm planning the lesson, what's the lesson going to do besides creating a gallery of their thought? One of the ways we're going to do that is we're going to publish all that content online somewhere, somehow. And in my classroom, I always try to think about it. Anytime I think about the kids handing something in my head is like, whoa, don't hand it in, publish it. Is there a way that I can get them to hand it in by publishing it? Because that changes the dynamic. The sense of audience is completely different. When students write a paper and do an assignment for me, I mark it, I grade it, maybe they do really well, I get 80, 90%, whatever it is, right? And I give it back to the student, I say, here you go, huh? And he looks at, wow, 90%, fantastic. Walks out the door and stops in the trash on his way out. Because that's it, right? Everybody who's going to see it has seen it, and it's over. But if I want to give it a bit of a facelift, I want to give permanence. I want it to last, and it's funny because, you know, we think of things like now, all the, you know, digital e-cards and all that stuff, it's like demo. Right? That stuff's not real. It has no permanence. Yeah, stuff that you hand in to someone on paper, well, that's concrete, you can touch that, right? But 10 years from now, in my classes, my students will probably not have any paper copies of anything they did in school with me. But all the digital stuff that they publish is still going to be there. And it's good stuff that they're proud of. Maybe they share that with their children and grandchildren someday. Maybe that serves as models to amplify learning down through the generations. So that's one of the things that I think about publishing it. And this ties into the second principle from the book, that learning, whatever it is that kids are learning, should occur in a network. That you, when you're teaching something, You shouldn't. Our understanding of knowledge, and we do this often in education, is we teach hierarchically, right? There's like the big idea, and there's the subset, etc. But if you actually talk to an expert in any domain, it doesn't pick a domain, it doesn't matter. Your own stuff that you teach, pick a topic, any topic, something you teach, it doesn't matter what it is, think about it. When you think of that idea and everything around it, how does it fit into how you understand your subject? In my case, when I think of something like, okay, I'll scare you, a quadratic formula. Right, when I think of the quadratic formula, I think of, well, there's a connection there that I can draw by showing a graph. There's a connection there that I can show by showing an equation, tables of values. It has to do with certain shaped functions, but I can use it for different kinds of functions that aren't really. In my mind, the connections around that one idea do not fall into a nice, neat hierarchy. It actually falls into a network of concepts. So when we're teaching, where does the idea that you're teaching fit into the network of ideas that it's connected to? And convey that to your students, because that's how we really think. We don't think in nice, neat hierarchies. And the third thing that I want to do, if I want to do something with a bit of a Web 2.0 facelift, is I want students to create knowledge. I want them to create content that educates other people. So whatever they learned, I want them to be able to create something with it that's going to educate an interested learner, whatever that learner may be. Are you familiar with Bloom's taxonomy? Right? At the bottom is remember, and then we have understanding, then application, then analysis, synthesis, evaluation, and it's been revised recently in the last few years. A new level's been placed at the very apex of the pyramid, and it's called creation. Because when students have to create content that educates, it's going to require the use of all those other skills, all those other layers. Often we fall victim to teaching to the bottom of the pyramid. We fall victim to teaching at the levels of remember and understand. Where we really would like to see them working is moving up past analysis into synthesis and evaluation. And by having them create content that educates, it actually incorporates all the stuff that comes in underneath. So this is kind of a key thing for me. What am I going to have them create around this lesson, whatever it is that I'm going to teach? And it ties into the third principle that comes out of that book, which is to take a metacognitive approach. The degrees to which you can get kids to think about how they think about what they're learning, thinking about thinking, you're going to deepen what they learn. And suddenly a dry, lackluster assignment might take on a whole new life. It's a two-way street, because it affects me. This doing some of this stuff in my classes has had an impact on me as well. It's not just the kids that start thinking about their thinking, but I start thinking about my teaching and my thinking and my own understandings of how all this stuff fits together. So there's often a give and take, and it's not kind of a clean thing. It's a little bit messy, and yeah, sometimes it doesn't work. And that's okay. I mean, anytime you want to try something new, you got to be willing to take a bit of a risk. If it works, it's going to be great. If it doesn't, there's still something to be learned from that, and try again next time. So let's start with some real concrete examples. Lots of teachers, at the end of a unit of study, ask students to create what's called a mind map. And the students can make some really beautiful stuff. This is a picture that two different students have made mind maps. And around whatever the unit was that they were studying, this one comes from biology, this one's about running. Okay, so this is about cells, and this one's about running. And so this is all the different kinds of things that the kids might put into a mind map. Now, when I'm teaching math, I got to an end of unit of study, and I started thinking about, well, how might I have my students create a mind map? And remember, I've got in mind, they're going to publish something, they're going to create something, and I want them to reflect on what they're learning, which is why we like mind maps, because it makes kids reflective about their learning. But how am I going to incorporate those other two? This was the assignment. This was the facelift. I teach math. This is from a grade 11 class. The students were all told at the end of the unit of study that they had to use their cell phones and go out into the world and find a picture. The theme that they had for this particular picture was quadratic functions. That's parabolas. And that's where that comes from. So I'm going to show you what it looks like. And what they have to do is find a real world picture where math occurs naturally in the world around you and take a picture of it. We developed a rubric for assessing it. We used Google Docs to do that. We did it collaboratively. I had three classes working on this talk because the assignment is applicable to all levels. You know, you just give them different themes. And this is what this particular student did. She took this picture. Now, part of the assignment was that if they take pictures of themselves, they can't take pictures of their faces because it had to remain anonymous. And so this is how she did that. This is a website called Flickr. How many people have heard of Flickr? Okay, it's a photo sharing website, but it has this really neat feature that if you're logged into your account, you can add notes on top of the pictures that you upload there. So for example, when I touch this picture, there's little spots, or hot spots on the picture. And she says, because this parabola is opening downwards, we know that the variable parameter A will be negative. And she's incorporated all sorts of things that she's learned in this unit. And this is her mind map. All of her understanding about that unit of quadratic functions is here. But the real juice from this doesn't come from her creation of the assignment alone. The real juice is when the other kids, remember I talked about the gallery of thoughts that you want to create. When the other kids come in who've done the same assignment, and they come in and they can see what the other, what she was thinking, and look at her thoughts and say, oh, I forgot that in my mind map. And that introduces that metacognitive layer that we were talking about. And so the assignment kind of takes on a new life. And because it's digital, it's permanent. And I've actually used this a couple of years ago. This is from 2006. I use this in my classes now when I'm teaching quadratic functions because the worksheet is exemplary. All my classes are hybrid classes. There's an online and a face-to-face component. And side-by-side with my class, we run a class web log. And so all the pictures that the students were creating are in this little dynamic image on the right-hand side that's constantly updating with all the different images that they were contributed as kids added images into the bucket and handed them in. And the way they handed them in was by publishing them on Flickr, and they used the tag here, it's hard to see, but it's PC30SF07, a combination of letters and numbers that no one's going to happen upon by chance, that I created a unique tag for my course. So all the stuff that the kids create and build in different places on the internet, I can aggregate with that one tag, because I suspect no one else in the world is using quite that combination. For me, it stands for Pre-Calculus 30S, fall of 2006. Meaningful to me and my students, but to no one else. So that's an important piece of what we do. Should I stop? Maybe take a pause? Do you want to? Yeah.
Do each one of your students then have their own Flickr account, or have you made a class?
In my class, yes. I teach high school.
Yeah.
They all have their own Flickr account. A colleague of mine in Moose Jaw, Kathy Cassidy, teaches grade one. They have a class Flickr account. And the kids have a unique tag for each student in the class, but there's one Flickr account. And you can see there's multiple tags, right? So the assignment tag for this particular assignment was quadratic. And the class tag, PC30SF07. So when I go to Flickr and I search, I'll search the class tag and I'll search the assignment tag. And what comes up is just my kid's stuff because no one else is using that tag. That's also tagged with the assignment, and that's how they hand it in. Now also, when they upload to Flickr, it's private date stamped. So there's a deadline and they need it, or they don't. But it's clear, very transparent. Anything else you're showing me about? I'll give you another example. Okay.
Before you move on.
Yeah?
Do you have any form of backup in place should, say, Flickr come down or be offline for a period of time for maintenance? Is there anything that you can
Yeah, do? Often what I'll do, because we have that class blog running side by side, I get them to cross-post to the class blog, so it's there. I have a copy of the image there, but it's really, it's on Flickr that you get those hotspots, like you need Flickr. The likelihood of Flickr going down, it's a Canadian company, started in Vancouver, and then Yahoo bought them, right? And then Google went and started Picasa. I love watching these guys compete, right? It just makes more good stuff for us. But So yeah, I'm not really worried about Flickr going down. But if it does go down, then yeah, that content is gone.
I'm not just thinking long-term, though, just in the short-term. Like, what if Flickr is under maintenance, or there's a snag in the network, and they can't get that stuff uploaded for the period of...
It's not likely to happen with Flickr. Like, their back-end is supported by Yahoo. That's a huge company. And while it does, I've seen it occasionally, you've had, like, a Flickr hiccup. It's literally a hiccup. Like, when something goes wrong on Flickr, you've got millions of people around the world that are really ticked off. They're very sensitive to that. And they've got engineers that work on it immediately. In my school division, we won't get that kind of support.
So just you big enough companies that...
Yeah, like, there's certain sites that have built up some credibility. That Flickr's one of them. Flickr's one of them. But I wouldn't hesitate to try other sites. Certainly when you start thinking in the long term, you gotta wonder, like, does it have permanence in the way that I talked about at the beginning? I think the Google suite of tools is likely gonna be around for a while. I think Yahoo's suite of tools is gonna be around for a while. Okay. I'm trying to remember why I did this one. Cool, okay. Solution manuals. So the solution manual, sometimes kids will look up answers to problems and solution manuals. Now again, I'm teaching math, right? So you have some problems, and I suppose this might apply to any domain where kids have problems that they have to solve and demonstrate what they understand. So in my class, I started wondering, as they were preparing for their exams, and they're working through all these different problems as a preparatory exercise, old exams and stuff. And I started thinking, like, sometimes one kid would sink his teeth into a really good problem, and I kind of wished everybody kind of saw what this kid did, or the problem that this kid kind of got stuck on, because the mistake was beautiful, right? Because some mistakes are beautiful, right? And it opens your eyes to the kind of misconception that we talked about earlier that probably a lot of people have, and you want to bring that up, you want to bring that to light so everybody can see it. So here's what I did. On a wiki, you're familiar with Wikipedia? How many people know what a wiki is? Okay, for those of you that don't, it's just a website that anybody can come along and add or delete from. That's it, that's Wikipedia, okay? I know that there are probably questions in your mind, if it's your first exposure to a wiki, what do you mean anybody can come add and delete? Does that mean that my kids will do good work and someone's gonna come along and vandalize it? Yes. Could happen. I've been doing this for years. It's never happened on any of the wikis, and I've used lots. In the event that someone has done something wrong, and someone that has happened accidentally, but the nice thing about a wiki is every time someone makes a change, it actually saves all the previous incarnations. So if someone comes along and erases everything, you go into the wiki, you click a button that says revert to this version, okay, and then it's all back. So it's really not too much of an issue. So I'll take you around maybe one of these wikis. Let's try that one. And the assignment was this. I seeded the wiki with a bunch of exam level problems. I took some problems from every unit of study that was covered in the course. And the assignment lasted 2 weeks. It was broken into two parts. The first part of the assignment was the kids had to go into the wiki and they had to find, wiki is just the website, okay? They go into the wiki and they had to find a problem there that they wanted to solve, whatever the problem was. This particular wiki was for an AP calculus exam. So I had 12 questions in the wiki, and some of those questions might be easier than others, but it's first come, first serve. I said, whoever gets there first, you get to pick the question that you want to solve, whichever one that is. And I say, the way you claim a question is not by typing on the page, I claim this one. That's not claiming a question. Anybody can come along and delete it with my blessing. You claim a question by writing out the solution. That's how you claim a question. So let's say a student, and some of these will be solved and some of them won't be, because there's more questions than perhaps what the kids did. So there's a question from the AP Calculus exam, and then this student comes along and they solve the question, and part of the assignment is not just to solve it, but to annotate it for an interested learner. Remember what I was saying, create content that educates. So they have to come in and they have to explain every step of the solution so that another student can come along and learn from them. That was the point. Sometimes they come in and they use color in a meaningful way. This is a very good solution, by the way, and this student actually in the end put his name on it. But what I would do, as they don't have to do that because I come in and I just go look at the history on that page. And it shows me that I created the question, and this student, Jen, has made all these different edits. And I can go back and look at any of those versions and see how he developed his solution every step of the way. And that was week one. Week one was just to pick a question and solve it. I'll show you some other solutions, because some of them are more dramatic. They create images and graphs and all kinds of stuff. Colors is amazing, some of the stuff that the kids do, because I'm allowing them to be a little bit more creative, and I encourage them to be creative in the way they approach it. Again, coming up to the top of Bloom's taxonomy. The second week of the assignment was that they had to come in, and you can see another student by the name of Maddie has come in and made some edits to this page. The assignment has two parts. The first part was a significant contribution, and this is what a significant contribution is. You go in there, you pick a question, and you solve it, and I have links to an example that a student did somewhere else. That's week one. You have 1 week, I don't care when you do it, anytime in that week, go in there, find a question, solve it, annotate it. This is an example of what a good solution looks like. The student has made very good use of color. When they change color, they mean different things. They're kind of explaining something procedural here, and then in blue, they're explaining some conceptual stuff about what's going on. And all their work is there in black. And this is kind of pretty straightforward stuff, okay, as far as math goes. Week one, just solve it and annotate it. Week two is, the kids think that week one is the tough part of the assignment. I personally think that week two is the tough part. Because in week two, they've got to go back and remember those beautiful mistakes I talked about. They then are wading through galleries of thought, right? You want to see their thinking. So they show it. The students have to go back into the wiki and they have to find a question that's been solved in error. Find the mistakes and correct them. And this is called a significant contribution. A significant contribution is when you edit someone else's work, not your own, and improve it in some way. Now, it's possible that there's no corrections, that everybody did beautiful work. So I said, well, a significant, you know, a constructive modification could also be you make navigation work on the wiki. If they put a graph in there and it's not very nice, you want to pretty it up, you go ahead and you make it more elegant and appealing to look at. That's a significant contribution. Anything that advances and develops the appeal of the solution, the appeal of the work in some meaningful way, that counts as a significant contribution. Oh, sorry, it's a constructive modification. Does that make sense? I think that's a lot harder for kids. They got to get over the hump of being willing to change someone else's work. And the amount of review involved in picking out which question are you going to correct, they got to go read a bunch of different questions and they have to evaluate them. Is it correct? Is there a mistake here? There's a whole lot going on there. Okay. So that was my next example.
Darren?
Yes, sir.
Is there a downside to having
I haven't found one yet. I haven't found one yet. So, I mean, I've heard objections along the lines of, well, someone's going to come along, you know, you've got all that stuff on the blog, and they're going to make some nasty comments on the blog. I guess part of this is learning what it means to be an ethical citizen, right? Digital ethics comes with this. Kids, we've talked about this in my classes. If you are doing good work and you're struggling hard to learn and you're sharing that and someone comes along and they see that and the only thing that they can think to do is make some, you know, some libelous comment, some nasty comment, that's not really a comment about you, is it? It's a comment about them. So if it happens, let me know.
What about a student who's on the margins of understanding
this is brilliant for them. It's brilliant, and I have this all the time with my students. Every time I get them to explain this, particularly for the weak kids, the weak kids will start by saying to me, they come to me and they say to me, Mr. K, I don't understand. okay, what don't you understand? I don't understand anything. You have this. And I'm like, oh, well, I gotta start again from the beginning? Like, where do I begin? It's very aggravating. But remember, the galleries of thought, you force them to explain what they do understand. And I said, you know what, a good solution includes you saying stuff like, well, this is the part I get. Let me show you with an example. And this part, I'm not sure about what to do. I think the first step is this, but I'm not sure why that's the first step. And I'm not sure what I would do next. And that's good. That's good work. Students know that. And I'm explicit about that with them. And what ends up happening is that kids come to me and say, I don't understand. Yes. But not only now I know, because now I can see what's going on behind their eyes. Because they showed me. And I can see exactly where the problem is. And like a surgeon, we can go right into the spot they're struggling with and say, you know what? You understand like 90% of this stuff. There's just this one little thing you're struggling with. Let me show you. 2 minutes later, we talk about it. It's over. It happened to me with two girls yesterday. Because they had to, a different kind of assignment again. I call it a scribe post on the class blogs. These two girls had to summarize their learning on the class blog, which we can talk about later if you want. And they walked away from the class after literally a 2-minute conversation where they would have said one of those things like, I understand nothing, which is obviously not true, right? But now we knew what the problem was. We fixed it in no time. And it was actually a sophisticated concept that they were struggling with, but they got it now. Did I answer your question? Okay. I thought I might show you something that's a work in progress, because what I've been showing you is kind of like high school stuff, math, all that, right? This, I don't know where this came from. I found this online. To me, this looks like someone had a mapping assignment. They had to find something about the Philippines. They built a bulletin board. They got from something here in the industry in the Philippines. They have different images, the map and the flag about the Philippines. It's a beautiful thing that you would take, like we see in this classroom, which is not mine. This beautiful classroom belongs to a colleague of mine by the name of Sylvia. She's great. But they do this great stuff. But where is this stuff going to be in 5 years? Where's all that stuff going to end up 10 years from now? Because look at the amount of energy and time that kids put into building that stuff. Like, it doesn't, you don't really have to read it too closely to just look at it and say, wow, they've invested a lot of themselves in putting this stuff together. When it comes off the wall and it gets returned to the students, what are the students going to do with it? What would your son or daughter do with it? And eventually it's going to end up somewhere impermanent. Some of them are, some of them are newer, and some of them are older.
The glue is coming.
Yeah. I mean, they're nice, right? But what's going to happen in the long term? So let me explain to you a little bit. I'm going to tell you a story about my son. My son started grade 7 this year. He started grade 7, and in his English language arts class, in his English language arts class, they had to read this book, Underground to Canada. And it's about slavery in the U.S. and the Underground Railroad, and it follows the lives of two slave girls and their travel to freedom through the Underground Railroad. So they were given this, my son was given this assignment. This is what he had to do. They read the novel, and this character, June Lilly, she's Cape's All Odds by coming to Canada, and the assignment is, using any materials you wish, create an artistic representation of June Lilly's journey, beginning in Virginia, ending in Ontario. On page 10 of the novel, there's a map that you can use as a guide for your artistic recreation of what the kids made. So feel free to use any of the following. Pictures from magazines, the internet, drawings, scrapbooking materials, photos, poster board, much, much more. And here's what you're going to be assessed on. Have fun. So that's the assignment. The idea is the kids are going to create a map, right? And they took a map out of the book. And there's the text in the front of the book, and it shows the map. You know, June Lilly starts here in Virginia. She travels down to Tennessee. And eventually works her way through the Underground Railroad into Canada. And all along the map, she had a story follows her travels. And they have to create a map. So the kids are basically going to copy this. Right? This is kind of their outlines, their guideline. And they're going to fill it up with pictures, and they're going to create a poster. So my son's talking to me and he says, Dad, what can I do with this? And we start brainstorming different ideas. And so this is what we came up with. He's not finished. He's in the middle of building this. The assignment isn't due for another week or two. So he created a Google map. And he actually found those locations on the map, for real. And the amount of time he took to actually make sure the pin went in the right spot. And on that spot, if you click on it, whoops. I forgot to put the link. I'm going to give you guys the link, because I want you to see his map. Bear with me while I take it out of my email account. John, let's go over. Anyways, so what he did was he created this Google map, and he's got the positions, all those spots on that map. And what he also did was he filled in. If the internet works quick, this will be good. There's a link to his map. Here's his map, and I'll show you. This is live now. But I'll link to his stuff. And, you know, a personal appeal. I'm going to show you how you can leave a comment on his map. Go home and say something to him. Think about how juiced this grade 7 kid is going to be when people he doesn't know are going to just come in and say some positive things about what he's doing. And then think about how your students might feel when someone reciprocates that way to you. So this is what he's done. He's doing these little write-ups, and he's in the middle here. He's kind of, this line should be above. He's going to move stuff around, and it's going to go in order. He's created these titles. So there's two ways you can interact with the map. There's where they begin. And what he's got here is he's got text that describes the journey of the characters. So he's summarizing the book and the novel. He went into Flickr, and he started looking for pictures of all the different places that they were at. And when he did that, I was teaching him about copyright. I said, Cass, we can't take any picture you want that's online. That's called stealing. And that's not legal, and it's wrong. But what you can do is there's a different kind of copyright called Creative Commons. And Creative Commons copyright, which if you want to know more about, I'm happy to talk about. Make sure you ask me. Creative Commons copyright means that you can use stuff without specifically asking them, and it's okay as long as you say where you got the picture from. So I taught him that, and he now knows how to give attribution on a picture. He knows how to go into Flickr, and he knows how to search for the pictures he's allowed to use. And he knows he's not allowed to use the other ones, and he knows how to tell the difference. And he describes why he's using this picture, so he's making a connection between different media. And then he went onto YouTube, and he started looking through all the videos on YouTube around the slavery movement and the Underground Railroad. I can't tell you how much video this kid watched before he settled on this video that he would use. So is he learning? And he loves this particular video because he really likes the song. I should plug in the speakers. Can we? Video tells the journey of the slaves and how they left Africa and they were taken to Latin America. So he makes a link. He says a similar journey for the Africans that end up in the United States. And I mean, it's just the real value in this assignment is not the final product, which I think is cool. It's the process. Because he's learning so much more by creating this than he would have if he just made a poster that finds the pictures clipped out of magazines.
Has he told anyone what he's doing yet, or is he going to surprise?
His teacher knows, and you know how he's handing it in. He's going to email his teacher a tiny URL. Tiny URL is a website that if you take it, it's quite a long URL at the top there. It's a website that takes long addresses like that, and it turns it into about 26 characters. It's tinyurl.com/ and then 6-letter number combination. That's it. That's what he's going to give his teacher. That's how he's going to hand it in. And what you can do, and I really encourage you to do, is you can actually leave comments to think you have to be logged in. Whoops. I zoomed in. Zoomed out too much. So I can see his thing from my map, and then there's his thing. And if you see right here, it says rate this map, so you can give it a rating, but then over here you can write a comment. And if I click on that, it kind of opens a window where I can leave a comment on the map. So anybody that visits the map can now give him feedback. And the feedback isn't going to come just from his teacher. If you do it in a classroom, the feedback can come from you, yes, but also can come from your students, and you can build that learning community in the group. Which I think all classrooms should be communities, right? Not just a group of people. And then you can then invite the kids' families, other teachers that you know elsewhere, anyone in the world stumbling across this saying, hey, this is interesting, can leave a comment. What happened to me today is I published on my, every day I publish the slides, but we have a smart board in my classroom, so we save them and we publish on a website called SlideShare. And I got an email today. This was published on April 15th of 2008. And just today, this comment came in from a guest. And it says, can you show the work for this problem, parts A and B? The question that my AP Calculus kids did, like, last year. And so this has, and I would, what I would do is I would take this year's kids and say, you guys need to go get the answer. And you guys need to answer that question. So, that's what my son's doing. I'll have the link on the webpage. I'll share with you at the end. So, before I continue, right, oops, I can keep going, but maybe we should talk a bit.
The comment you got from somebody about last year's work, how did you stumble on that?
It's emailed to me. It's emailed to me automatically, so I don't have to kind of check that every day. It comes to me. I don't have to go to it. Yes?
What's your son's name? How do you let him know?
His name is Cass, K-A-S, short for Castriel. So if you call Cass, that just, you know, leave a message to Cass. That will be great. I have to apologize to you. My cell phone's going off, so I'm expecting a call from someone at my school division. So you can get detention afterwards. I just have to quickly take this home. Any questions that you want to ask?
Or? My seat, sorry.
No, you change seats. I don't care where you sit. Do we want to talk about any? Is it time to start sharing lesson plans, or you want to see more examples?
Who are these people again?
I don't know these kids.
Oh, I thought they were really...
These kids, I don't know. I know the kids on the next page. That's interesting because you see, like with my students, you never see my kids' faces. You never will. I won't let them publish their faces. I found this picture on Flickr, and these kids are sharing a project that they created. So I wanted to talk to you about the project that I have my kids create. It's a summary assignment that they do at the end of the unit of study, I think. Not going to jump too deep into it. You'll see my kids. You know, this is the old one. And then I can show you what a Web 2.0 facelift looks like. But maybe we should talk about your ideas. I'm hopeful that when you read the description of this session, you saw that it asked you to come with your lesson, right? Your idea. What do you do in your class? Was there something that you thought maybe, I wonder if I could do this differently, or just to bounce some ideas around? Even if you don't necessarily go back on Monday and start doing that, at least start letting the ideas float around and percolate a bit, see what's possible, imagine.
These examples are really
more. Yeah? Okay. I'm happy to continue, but if someone has something to share.
I told you last time, I mentioned you that we have our own little websites connected to our school websites now. We're supposed to update it. And we don't have an issue about photos, you know.
Right.
The parents have a password and the parents have to get it. So we've got pictures of when we went to the Assiniboine Park Conservatory and we went out and made snowmen a couple weeks ago. And I'd like to get them to write stories. They have, some have already written stories. I'd like to get them to type out their stories so that they can share it with everybody in the classroom. And we do get access to all the other classrooms, and some parents I know have been checking out all the other teachers' websites, these little ones, and you know, some of them are more active than others.
Yeah.
But it's pretty basic, it's pretty simple to do. It doesn't take too long. I felt it was going to be onerous, and I thought it was going to be...
How do you find the engagement with the students in your classes are changing?
Some are definitely very keen. They go home and tell mom that something's changing. I try to change a little something on the website as often as possible. That'll draw them in, and so I let them know, and so they want to check it out every once in a while. So some parents are doing it, some aren't. I mean, there's a little note saying, you know, have you been to this website? Please email me and let me know what you think of it. And I haven't got anything back. People often don't, you know, spend that extra couple minutes to respond.
Have you gotten any feedback from any parents at all yet?
Well, I did at parent teachers.
Right.
We got things, and they discussed how much they enjoyed looking at it all.
Any negative feedback from parents?
No.
Universally positive?
Yeah.
Is it a website or a wiki?
No, it's a web. It's just hooked up to our school website, and they have to log on. And when they log on, they've got access to all the teachers' websites. You just click on it, and the teacher can update events, calendars, they can put up documents, they can put up permission forms that maybe were sent home on a hard copy. I can put up assignments if I want. I guess about anything can go up there. Documents, images, calendar, website links. So I put a bunch of these science websites that on plant growth that I thought would be interesting, and they went there. And there's also this thing. There's a spelling website where they can put their own words from the spelling unit, and it'll give them a sentence, and they can practice it that way. And whatever, you know, things are given to me, and I'll pass them on. And so they get keen. And then they go. There was somebody had a really cool pumpkin carving website. You can carve a pumpkin and make your face on it. It's a toy, you know. But you know, one teacher had it up, and I thought, oh, okay, well, go take a look. I stuck it on mine for a while, and then Halloween was over, I got rid of it and put some new stuff up.
So if I heard you right, you're getting ideas by being able to see what other teachers are doing. It's having an impact on your own class, what you do.
Each kid will go out and look at the other ones. The kindergarten teacher, she's doing a pretty good job right now, so hers becomes quite popular. So.
What grade do you teach?
3.
So the grade 3s are being taught by the kindergartens?
Well, they're not, like, it's the kindergarten teacher that's website is a little bit more...
Okay.
Exciting, and they might take a look there and see what's going on there. Parents will look at all the different teachers' websites too and see what's going on there.
So there's a lot of
kind of a large learning community, I suppose. But I'd like to get more into this, getting them more involved in putting stuff up. I want them to do a photo story about plant growth. I took about 24 pictures of different bean plants that we've got growing at different stages. You know, one's just coming out of the soil, just germinated, and then we've got some that are a little bit longer. And they watch their own bean plants at different stages, and they're going to have to make a photo story to talk about, you know, the various stages. And I want to try to figure out a way to get that up on.
Publish it,
yeah.
There's a site called VoiceThread, which is one you might be able to use, voicethread.com. Y'all might read VoiceThread. What you could do, you take all the images, and then you can leave a comment on the image. So the comment could be just something in text. You could leave an audio comment. You can even have a video comment. You can comment in any of these ways. And as you're leaving your comment, you can actually write on the image to circle something and draw people's attention to that thing, and then the writing fades after a few seconds. So just, you know, and then the next commenter can come.
You're suggesting instead of doing a photo story?
No, I'm saying that you can do photo story. I'm saying there's another way that you can think about it. The nice thing about the VoiceThread is its portability. Because you go to the VoiceThread site and you create a VoiceThread, and it's honestly, it's as simple as like just clicking. If you've ever sent an attachment to email, if you've ever done that, that's how hard it is to put images and stuff into a VoiceThread. It's the same sort of thing. Sure. And then, yeah, we'll both stay after school. And the nice thing about it is that once you've created that VoiceThread, when it's done, it has something called embed code. So you basically just click on it. It looks like gobbledygook, but you don't need to understand it. You just copy it, and you go over to your website, your webpage, wherever it is. You paste that code in, and then, boom, there's the VoiceThread. You can put that on any, so you can take that same VoiceThread, and if the family has a family website, like my family has a family wiki, where we put slideshows, pictures, audio files of stuff that happened in the family, little videos, so anybody in the family, wherever we are in the world, can kind of see what's going on.
And is that on the same one, VoiceThread?
No, we have a wiki, and then you can put a VoiceThread on the wiki, because a wiki is just a web page, right, where you can put all kinds of stuff. And so the point I'm trying to make is that you might have it on your class blog, and then the kid might put it on his family blog. It's going to be in all these different places, the same VoiceThread. Anybody that comes along and leaves a comment, that comment will appear in all of those places because it's the same object, digitally speaking. Does that make sense, what I'm describing? Hard to picture. Let's get a VoiceThread up here and take a look.
Darren, while you're doing that, I've done everything you said right up to that point. I've got it on my wiki embedded. I've said, let's go and let's comment on this.
Yeah.
I've even made separate users.
Okay,
like
excellent.
I'm thinking I'm close.
Yeah.
I cannot, they ask for them to be registered somehow.
For the users to be registered?
To be able to comment or interact with
you need an account.
Okay, but now there's add VoiceThread where you can, I made my class account, registered all the kids, and
right.
I thought they would change to the right person. I'm still running into trouble, so I know there's some little thing that I'm missing. VoiceThread is a great thing. If you can get to
it. Okay, I'm going to browse VoiceThread. This is a good one just to explain kind of what VoiceThread is. This is
all yours. Those are
No. These are all people from all over the world. This one was created by the creators of the website VoiceThread, and it describes what a VoiceThread is.
What is a VoiceThread?
Yeah, I want to know.
Conversation, whether it's images, videos, documents, or presentations, or any combination of them. A VoiceThread can securely capture and hold an entire group discussion on one simple page. When people make their new comments, they will fill in around the edges, and the participants can even draw while they're talking, which is a very efficient way of getting your point across. Down here, behind the comment button, are actually five different ways for people to comment: by telephone, by webcam, by microphone, by text, or even file upload. Which means that if you can load this page at all, you can participate in this conversation, period. Now let's take a quick look at how you get around in a VoiceThread. The first thing is the image itself. If you want to get a better look at it, you can click on the image to zoom in and look around. You can try this right now while I'm talking. just click once to go in and once to get out. And while you're zoomed in, you can move your mouse around and pull the picture in any direction you want. The next thing, which is really the most important, is have a comment. The first thing you need to know is that you are always in control and you can always delete your own comment. Just click this garbage can icon that you'll see whenever your comment is playing, and then you can try it again. So don't sweat it and just say whatever's on your mind. After you've looked around at this VoiceThread and you register, click the comment button that's right down here, and you can try out all 5 different ways to comment. The last thing is how to get around in a VoiceThread. There are 2 ways to hear comments. The first is to just click on a person's face like mine over there, or you can use the controls that are beneath the type and record buttons over here. To go through all of the other pages of the VoiceBook, you can either use the big arrows that are in each corner, or you can click on the navigator button over here. And if you click on that, we'll show you all of the pages at once, and you can then click on the one.
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
You want to go to. The rest of this book is going to show you some individual pages from some VoiceThreads we really like, and also show you a couple of hidden tricks that a VoiceThread can perform.
Okay, I'm Pat Muth, and I'm the happy mother here in this picture of these children, some of whom appear to have anxiety disorders. Let's see. I don't know why they look unhappy, because I'm their mother, and they should be happy. I think that we were on our way, that this was a passport photo, and we were on our way to Nigeria, and their daddy had gone off and left us to make this trip alone. And so getting all these people together for that passport photo was not easy. Now, in the background, my husband is making an excuse for having left us, saying that there was a civil war going on and that we actually couldn't go with him. And maybe that's why these people look unhappy here. Anyway, I can only say I hope that they grew up to be happier than this.
I think I'm so unhappy because what could have just happened is that Chris must have teased me really badly. He's the one smiling really happily. And when I complained to Mother, she probably scolded me. That's why I'm sad. And Kathy looks like she's about to kill someone, but we all know that now that she just had a very bad eyesight and didn't have glasses yet.
Is that an actual voice? Is this the actual character? Is that just the thing you're thinking of?
No, this is, I believe this is, they're talking about their actual family.
Oh, you and your sister and brother is right.
Well, this is the photo that launched 1,000 ships. This is the photo that was the inspiration behind VoiceThread. And it's apropos. because this may be the greatest photo ever taken.
Which one, Tim? Did you see the one with the smile on his
face? And then here, this photo has the... Oh, there's the bump. It's the bump.
Gee, I was so skinny. Look at those arms. Times have changed. Anyway, that was in his backyard in Fort Worth. And we were in love, and we still are. Or I should speak for myself. I still am.
It's interesting because you look at something like that, right? And you remember my comments earlier about the ephemeral quality that we associate with digital stuff. But the chances are that it'll still be around in a while. And the history recorded here is fantastic for that family.
This monster's name is Sword Dragon Man. It was the first card I ever made. And,
But you want to keep hearing this? There's a lot of comments. Maybe it's enough. Okay, you get the idea.
Okay, so...
But if you just want to skip to one of those comments, you can just...
That's like that. Pictures? Or, like, just going picture to picture, so you upload each picture on a different screen and then comment on the raft.
We actually upload them all at once. There's a page that says upload your pictures, or if you have a Flickr account, it will pull them for you straight out of Flickr.
I guess what I'm thinking is... Okay, so my wife's doing this. She's a grade 2 teacher. She's doing a thing with metamorphosis with the mealworms, and they turn into beetles. She never tells the kids that we put them in the garage and they all freeze to death, because we don't know what we're going to do with all these beetles, because the test thorn won't take them, because nothing really eats anything. Anyway, but I just wonder, okay, so what can she do with that?
Okay, so let's say that she takes pictures, right, of the kids around the I'm imagining
they
having a tank.
They do a daily observation of it, and they record in their journal what's going on with them.
Right. So chances are, from one day to the next day, most of the time there's not a lot of change, and then some days there's something dramatic. So you take your picture every day, and she could upload those things to Flickr, and have those put a tag, a unique tag for the assignment. So every day she's got it, and she would call it, you know, you'd have a second tag, day 1, day 2, day 3, whatever, however many days you're going to watch it. And then you could create a slideshow on Flickr that's just going to show those slides over time, and you can embed that on the class webpage somewhere. Lots of ways you can get a class webpage, lots of ways. So you have that, and you have that slideshow. Then, the moments that are dramatic, when you see there's been something dramatic has happened overnight in the tank, those pictures, which is probably a small handful, right? You take those pictures and put them on a voice thread, and then have the kids come in, and teach them what it means to use an avatar. So they learn something about digital ethics, a picture that represents them, but is not of them. And so then they come in, and they can leave their comments about how they felt when they saw it that day. And you can have them do this the day that it happened, so you can actually capture the authentic reaction of the kids. And then when the project's over, the kids can go back. And you're talking about grade 2. Maybe they do a little writing assignment around that, a little reflection about how did you feel, right? Do you remember that feeling now when you listen to it again? Did you miss something that one of your other classmates noticed? Because it's all archived on the voice thread. So what you could do with that is many, many things, right? You could have that slideshow that has every single day, and it's just going to go, you know, picture after picture, and can show the entire evolution of that. That's one artifact that you can create over on Flickr. And you can, again, with Flickr, you get embed code for these slideshows, so you can embed it somewhere else. There's another tool called SlideFlickr.com, and it does the same thing as Flickr, just creates slideshows, but it's got a link that you, if you have some music, and you get some Creative Commons music so that it's legal, and you link that to the slideshow so that music is playing as the slides are going, which is more dynamic and it's more interesting, and you can turn the music on or off if you like. So there's one artifact. Then you've got the artifact where the kids have a voice thread that they create about it. Then you have kids go write about what they're doing, but have them publish their writing on a class blog. And then part of the assignment is for kids to then go back and visit what each kid has contributed and leave some comment. And I usually give them a structure for leaving comments. I say you have to leave two compliments and a wish as a sandwich. You say something you like about what they did. Say, I wish you had also done, or I wish you had done this instead. And then end with a compliment. There's a lot of ethics that gets taught in that way. But it also creates meaning for the student who's receiving the comment. And it's encouragement coming from the other kids. Also, it takes some of the load off the teacher because it's not on you to comment on every piece of student work. And so you distribute that workload across the kids, which adds meaning to the kids. Invite the families to come in, do the same. Let the parents know about your two compliments and a wish framework.
One of your requirements in the project is comment on other students' work. Is there any way to see who commented and who hasn't?
Is there any way to see who has and who hasn't?
I have about 20.
And yeah.
One of the things I have to do is leave compliments and a wish.
Yeah. There is. Absolutely. When someone leaves a comment, it gets labeled, it's time and date stamped, and it's labeled with the name of the commenter. So you can use aliases for your students. In my class, we use first names only, because there's lots of people by a certain first name, so we're not worried about that. So just first names, which makes it easy for me to identify. Also, on any of these digital artifacts, if you are the creator of the original artifact, be it a blog or a voice thread or a wiki or whatever, you can set it up so that it automatically sends you an email anytime someone leaves a comment. Now, I caution you about getting too granular in assessing students commenting. I think it's kind of like a participatory sort of thing, like you do it or you don't. I wouldn't get too deep into assessing, well, is this comment, you know, quality class 5 and this quality class 1? Yeah, just do it. Just do it. Because what happens is when kids see that and when they start getting good comments, they then want to give good comments. And what you have is a process that evolves over time where kids start one-upping each other in the quality of the work that they do and share. Yeah, and that's part of building the community that I was talking about earlier.
I couldn't go on and take somebody else's identity and leave a comment for somebody else's identity.
Only the administrator can delete a comment. And the kid, the student can delete their own comment.
So they all have their own password?
Yeah. That's right. So each student would have, now this means that at the front end of your school year, it's like my first week, 2 weeks is busy. Getting kids all signed up on the blog and that. And then as I teach them, you know, through the semesters, I teach them more and more about being digitally responsible and the different ways that we interact online. And the kids start to take more ownership of the online space, and I back off more and more. And I'm kind of watching what's going on, but I let them do most of the interaction.
So most of this happens on class?
Class blog. I mean, my class is on blog. Right. And you could put a voice thread on your class blog, you could put it on your website, you could put it anywhere, which is why I like stuff like this, because it's portable. Anything that I can embed, that's like a key feature of any tool. It's got to be embeddable or not terrible. It's got to be embeddable and free. Something I haven't mentioned about voice thread, they really support educators. There's two levels of participation for this tool. There's the free level, and then there's you pay for the premium service. Unless you're a teacher, you get the premium service for free. So you just connect with them, you let them know you're a teacher, you give them your school email address, the school that you attend, the school that you teach at, and they kind of check you out. And then they say, oh yeah, you're there, so here's the free account. Then you have unlimited number of voice threads, unlimited number of comments, and you can create as many as you want. And they're wonderful for supporting education, this particular site. I mean, but this is one, there's like many, many sites. Yeah.
So at the beginning of the year, do you teach your kids how to blog, how to embed something, how to put a picture in there, or do you just say, if you want a picture, figure out how to get it in there?
I don't require that they put a picture.
Okay.
Now later when we get to that mind map assignment that I showed you, and they haven't yet put a picture, I will do a demo in class. It takes 2 minutes. I say, this is how it's done. And anybody who didn't get it, there's always a few that get it right away and a few that didn't. And the few that get it are responsible for teaching to others. Right? So I'm always downloading. That's not the right image that I want to create, but I make them responsible for each other. Right? Like you need to know, so you need to learn. He knows, talk to him. She knows how to do that, talk to her. And I'm always kind of encouraging them to interact with each other. I'm not the only source of knowledge and wisdom. They can all learn an awful lot together. Anything else, folks? Can I pick on you? Because I know you came. I know you came with a lesson.
Well,
but an idea anyways.
A conundrum.
A conundrum. Let's hear the conundrum.
Wednesday is time to begin my science class. Three science articles. And then you can summarize them and provide some thoughts. And it's all on paper. And I have stacked that by on my dining room table right now. And I'd like to be able to get rid of the paper, number one, but also to have students publish their work so that others can see what it is they think about the content and talk about it as well.
Okay. So there's articles they have to read. They have to comment on those articles.
They choose their own articles.
They choose the articles. So they go find them. And then they have to do a little bit of a write-up on that article. And then they hand in the original article with the commentary. And when they do that, well, you need to read the original article so that the commentary makes sense. And then you got to read the commentary. And you're doing that for a number of kids. So you're busy.
10 hours
a month. So, and it's a valuable assignment.
They love it because they can choose whatever they're interested in, and they choose phenomenal stuff. I learn more about science from reading this than anything else, and then I think others can learn a lot as well.
Okay. Just now, I'm just riffing off the top of my head, okay? This is not like the way to do it, it's just an idea. So one idea that I would have is, first, I wouldn't have every student find a different article. I would start saying, I'd like you to get together in groups of three to pick an article. And you can do maybe a he said, she said about the article. Or each of you has to make some sort of different comment about the article in a different way. And actually, maybe even, once you left a comment on your article, I'd like you to leave a comment on another student's article as well. Because what we're going to do with all these articles, let's say, so in a class of 30, you now have somewhere between 7 and 10 articles, not 30. So that's huge right there. Okay?
Usually it's 150 articles.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah, no one knows what high school teachers go through, right? Okay. Now, so you got these articles. So you're going to cut it down to somewhere between a third and a quarter of what it was before in terms of the number of articles, because groups of students are going to work with a single article. So they got to get together and they got to agree on which article they're going to do. A lot of metacognition is going to be involved in that. Okay? Then once they've got that article online, they can take the article and save it as a PDF file. And a PDF file can go to a website called Scribd, S-C-R-I-B-D, not E-D, just D.com. Scribd is like iPaper, they call it internet paper. You take a PDF file, you upload it there, and then it creates a little bit of embed code. We love embed code. And then you take that embed code and you put it on the class blog. And so there's the article. There's the comments on that article. Those three kids have to leave a comment. Now, because you're admin on the blog, you're going to get an email every time a comment is made. You can even get an email, if you wish, every time someone publishes to the blog. So they create that article, you get that too. So it all sits in your email account. And the way I'd mark that is I would have two windows open on my computer. I have a class list in a Google spreadsheet. And I have all their names in there. And as I'm reading the kids' articles and comment, I immediately flip over to the spreadsheet and mark it instantly what the grade is. I would probably use a rubric in assessing it, and it would be a real simple rubric with 4 or 6 levels of quality, but never an odd number. And the reason I say never an odd number is because there's a tendency when you choose an odd number of classifications to go for the middle one. And by having an even number, you gotta decide, does it belong to the top or does it belong to the bottom half, and how far? You can then amplify what's going on, if you wish, by saying that have other students come along and comment on each other's articles so that learning gets shared across the class. And as I'm thinking about this now, what I'm thinking about is that the kid should write an abstract of the article. That the article should be there in iPaper once the kids find it, and they have to write an abstract of the article so that they have to summarize what was learned. So I would then, as the teacher, I would kind of focus on the abstract, and then you can kind of skim the article instead of having to read the whole thing. And then say, once you guys have done your abstract, you've got to go leave a comment on someone else's article. Because they've already done the metacognition on their article to read, to create the abstract. And then when they have to go look at someone else's, they're going to have to read a little more closely and leave comments there. It's going to eliminate paper completely. You're just going to, but you will get a lot of email. And so you can set up your email so that it tags stuff as it comes in, that it's for this class, and it goes into a folder. And that's how I organize it. So that when I got 10 minutes, I'll go through 4 or 5 and begin. Sir?
There's a website the other day, it's called Summarize. And we'll have the link which I can find for you. What it does is you take an article, pump that text into that, you can set it up to summarize it in 5 points, 10 points, 15 points. And it's just you get a synopsis, but it's not you doing it, but it might be a way to solve that.
And is that in your Delicious account?
Yes, your Delicious for people.
I'm gonna snag that.
What's your password?
My password? It's huge. I can't. It's actually, I don't remember it. I have to look it up every time.
When you say any article, what do you tell them?
What do you get?
Is there any parameters that have to do with science?
Yeah.
Is that all?
Any discipline of science, anything they're interested in, then you get it from websites.
Do they do this based on stuff that you've already been kind of talking about in class to get ideas, or do you do this early in the year or late in the year?
We start off with one common article at the beginning of the year, just to get an idea of what to do and how to do it. But it's absolutely incredible what they produce. It becomes huge.
What was the name of the site?
Summarize.
John, you copy and paste in this PDF of the article that you found, and if you somebody would have to read the article?
Put the link to the web page, and you copy the text to the article in there.
So you can go in the PDF and copy and paste it in, and it'll give you a summary and never have to read the article.
I have to go to my Delicious account.
That's a good job.
Is that right?
That does do a good job.
Jay Evans?
Yeah.
Go yank it. Now here's the thing, this website, Delicious, is a social bookmarking website. How many people know what social bookmarking is? Okay, social bookmarking, very quick. You've got bookmarks, I'm just looking at the time. What do you want? It's kind of late, maybe we should take a break, or maybe we should go 15 minutes and call it a day. What do you think? 15 minutes and we'll call it a day?
Sure.
Okay. So this is a social bookmarking website. So when you have your web browser, you have your favorites, right, that you have, and you go home, you find a cool site, you favorite it, and then you go to work, and you have your computer, you go, oh, that home, right, I wanted that site, but you favorite something that you find at work, and you go home, and you go, rats, it's at work. So instead of doing that, what you do is you save your bookmarks to this website, delicious.com. Save your bookmarks there, and home, office, friend's house, wherever you are, if you have access to the internet, you save your stuff here. But that's kind of just low-level stuff. Just gives you access. But now you tag your stuff so that, remember I talked about how knowledge, you think of as hierarchical? Delicious is called a flat hierarchy. Because when you want something, it's at the top of the heap, right, in terms of importance to you. So you gotta have a quick way to get it. So what you do is when you save it, you tag it, a bunch of keywords. And you can string together hundreds of them if you wish. So, for example, John's website that we're looking for right now is called Summarize. So my tag, Summarize, Text, Notes, Key Points, like anything that's going to help you remember what that site is about. And then when I want to look for it, I'll look on my list of tags, and I'll just click the one that I'm looking for. One of the tags that I use when I find cool tools is I call it Tools. And I also use many other tags as well as tools to kind of zero in on what I want. But if you go into my Delicious account, you'll see over 100 different tools, different websites that do different cool things. So John, you did this recently?
Yeah, a couple of days ago.
A couple of days ago?
It's probably easier to search.
Okay. Summarize?
Summarize.
There it is. Create summary. Summarize a document.
Great summary.
Here's a wiki assignment that I gave to my students. I'm just selecting all the text, and I'm going to paste it in here. And
here you can say how many parts you want.
Yeah, five will be good. Now let's see if it summarizes. So these are the highlights. You have to know the password. Find a list of buttons above the editing window you can use to modify the text in the wiki. Here's what you have to do. Significant contribution means you completely solve a problem, including steps. A constructive modification means you edit someone else's work, not your own. Only one part of question number 6, for example. You must make at least 2 edits contributions to the wiki. Generally speaking, these questions will require you to review a significant portion of the course. That's a pretty good summary of the assignment. That's a pretty good summary. And I guess if I didn't like it, I could have chose number of sentences or a term. It says 10 here, highlights. Let's see what happens. So now it's giving me more points. So I guess if I want to go more in depth. That's cool. That's going to save you all kinds of time. Yeah, not only is it a nice blog post, but I'm going back here, and that's John's bookmark that he saved, right, in his Delicious account, and John's part of my network. Every time John saves an account, I have a Delicious account too, and all the stuff he saves, as well as all the people in my network, it appears on a page in my Delicious account, called my network, which I'll show you in a moment. I really like what John saved here, so I click the save button, and now I'm going to tag this, summarize, and tools, and annotation, and that's just kind of the way I think about it.
There are 2 M's in summarize.
Thank you. And, I mean, I can keep going, but I'm going to stop there, and I think that's great. Thank you, sir. Yeah, we're all good.
Okay, thank you.
And so now that document is in my account as well now, that website. Now I'm still looking at John's account, so let me go find. And I'll kind of show you about my network. You really got to get a Delicious account if you don't have one. It's incredibly valuable. But as with most things, the best value comes not from just the stuff I save, but being able to see the stuff that people in my network save. So these are my bookmarks. I'm DCure Pathway everywhere online. It's me. If you ever see DCure Pathway, that's me. There's my network. So these are people who I follow, who I think save interesting sites. Now, some of them I know and some of them I don't know. It doesn't matter whether I know them or not. All that matters is the quality of the stuff that I see that person saving is of interest to me, so I'll add them to my network. They may reciprocate that or not, but frankly, I don't care. I don't care if they want to see what I save, I want what they save. Do you get what I'm saying?
Randomly.
Yeah, I'll show you in a second. Oh. What I'll do is I'll kind of navigate, I'll spend some time. You know how sometimes you search for information on the internet? Well, this are people's bookmarks, right? This is like pages that people looked at, and then websites that people looked at and said, this is good stuff. I want to keep that. So I often, when I'm looking for information, I don't start with Google. I often start with Delicious.
So everything's
open. You could make stuff private if you wish, but if you do that, then you rob the electric Kool-Aid of its flavor. So these are people in my network, and there's 2 flags means that I'm in their network as well. People that have this one, Ewan McIntosh, he's in my network, but I'm not in his, I guess. And then this one here, Seedlings Geek of the Week. is someone has an account called Stephen's Geek of the Week that I subscribe to, but they're not reciprocating that. And down here, these are my fans. These are people that want to know all the stuff that I'm saving. Now, some of those fans, it's reciprocal. I'm a fan of them as well, but the teacher, I like to know what he saves, he likes to know what I save, but this someone by the name of Grab or Boomer 11, I don't know who those people are, but they're interested in the same kinds of stuff I am. And to them, it doesn't matter that I can follow them or not. But now that I know that they're following me, I kind of think, well, if you're interested in stuff that I save, you probably have some cool stuff that I might be interested in. So let me go look at your stuff, and let me see, and then maybe I'll start following you too. And let them do the research for me. You get what I'm saying? So there's that. So how do I see what's going on? Well, if we go home to the Delicious main page, you can see these are the popular bookmarks right now on Delicious. So right now, these are the sites that people are saying that are very popular. And sometimes I'll just browse this stuff, because again, this is stuff that people have looked at and said, this is cool, I want to keep them. So there might be stuff that's interesting to me. Of course, interests are as varied as people. So generally speaking, when you build a network, there's greater value in the network because you're choosing people whose interests are kind of more in line with the stuff you're interested in, whereas this could be anything at all. But that doesn't mean there's no value here. I mean, I'll spend some time browsing here as well. So like I was saying, when I'm looking for information, my son had to do a project on the Western Salish people of Canada, an Aboriginal tribe in Western Canada. It was very hard to find information about it. The first place we went was here. And we only found one or two links. And then when we went to Google, there's only one or two links. There wasn't a whole lot that we could find out about them. But it was very, very, very efficient way to find information. Sir, John.
Just flag on there. Delicious is really, really good. It's also filled with all sorts of people, yeah, all over the world that are adding everything. It's there. So you need to be able to filter your people that you're following. But also for a plugin for Ego, which is another social bookmarking site, where you can the same thing. Like all of my bookmarks, I don't use Delicious anymore. I don't go to Delicious when I bookmark something. I do it all in Deco, and it saves it over to my Delicious account. And in Deco, you can join groups, you can set up groups where people can subscribe to that group and get a daily email of what kind of links are being saved. So every day I go through about 6 or 7 different groups and port them over to my Deco Literacy with ICT.
Digo is in some ways Delicious on steroids. Probably for those of you starting out, Delicious is maybe enough. Digo kind of takes everything to a bit of another level. Because you can build a whole conversation around a single link, and people, you can start a conversation and invite people into this discussion. Is this valuable to you? Are you using this in your class? How have you used it? What problems have you run into? I'm having this trouble. Is anybody else having the same problem? And you get these threaded conversations around a single website, and you get feedback from people from all over the world. Again, it's really a function of the quality of your network. It's who you, whose stuff you're following that really adds value to what you can do. So, for example, if I go, I've been in here for a while, so I've got 79 messages. Okay, these are new conversations that people have started. Each one of those conversations may have many layers of discussion. For example, these are all people in my network, 106 of them on Digo. Here, Flickr in Education. So there's a conversation. There's 97 different contributions to this discussion about how people are using Flickr in education. And I got invited into this conversation. So someone starts, I just created a new group about using Flickr in education. If you'd like to join, it's open, and I'd love others to share any examples, resources, ideas, etc. for using Flickr in circulate in education. Carolyn started the group, Carolyn Obama. So I go to her group and dig in, and I'm talking to educators from all over the world the different ways that they can use that tool.
You'll also see links that they've added in there, so they found a great idea that incorporates how you use Flickr distribution, and put that in there, so that saves you all that trouble. Okay, remember, like, search on Google Flickr education, go to this group, and there's information for you, subscribe to it, get an email, or a weekly email, or a monthly email, of things that are coming up, browse, and so it saves a ton of time.
So I have two concerns right now. One is your brain's probably fried. A lot of information to take in a short period of time. So you really need to be able to digest it. And I think you can even talk to someone about it, or maybe just kind of veg and think about it for a while. So I'm going to share the website with you, or I'm going to archive the presentation. But the other thing that I want to share is I have a concern also that it sounds like some of the stuff John and I are talking about, it's all about this tool, that tool, the other tool. And that's not what it's about at all. It's about these conversations around the tools, right? It's about the pedagogy behind it. It's about the three principles that I talked about, that I want to create a gallery of thinking. I want to find ways not only for me to wade through my students' thoughts, but for them to wade through each other's thoughts. I think mistakes can be beautiful. Some of them are absolutely elegant. And it's really, you know, kids need to see that. They need to see not just the right way of doing things, but the wrong way, and how it went wrong, and why it went wrong, and how to correct it. And it's about taking that content and publishing it, so that you build these networks. Because we learn, we understand knowledge in a networked fashion, and we should be learning in a networked fashion too, because that's really how our brains are wired. They're networks. And then finally, whatever you're going to do with your classes, however it is that you find something, you say, well, I think this might have a neat application in my class. The question is, what are the students in your class going to use that tool to create and educate someone else? Right? And everything I just said is really nothing to do with the tool. The tool is there like a pencil is there. Right? It's a functional thing. What it's really about is the pedagogy. And how do you structure the learning for your students in a way that enhances, deepens, and amplifies what they can do and share everything? Because it's really in the sharing, right, that we learn and that we all grow together. Okay, so let me share the website with you. The URL is xweb2, so this is Extreme Web Makeover, Extreme Web 2.0 Makeover, so letter X, W-E-B, number 2, xweb2.pbwiki, peanut butter wiki. It's as easy as making a peanut butter sandwich. That's why they call it pbwiki. So xweb2.pbwiki.com. I've got here, and I should probably throw some contact information for John as well. Is that right, John?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is just a little summary of what the West session was about today. If you want to get a hold of me, that's my professional blog. There's my email address. You can find me on Twitter, SlideShare, Delicious, Flickr, all across the metaverse. It's the same name, Dieter Batwa. I'm the same guy everywhere. And then the slides that we looked at today are going to be archived here. You'll be able to click through them at your leisure, download them if you wish. And then the audio recording that we've been keeping will also be archived here. If I have the time, and actually I probably won't this weekend, But if I have the time, I could try to sync the audio with the slides so you can relive the experience. But we talk much more than just the slides here. So, and then email me, tell me if you were in this session, and I'll send you an invitation to this wiki. And what that will do is it'll allow you to come over to the wiki and create a page if you wish, or leave a comment on right down here. You can leave a comment on this. You can say, oh, Darren, do you remember you were talking about that site? Do you have the link for it? And then we'll put the link. We'll make another list here called links, and we'll add all the stuff that you want to know. And in the future, if you guys want to kind of stay connected somehow, you can use this site as the hub to keep in touch with each other or me and share what you're doing. Okay? Sir?
You had talked about it the last session, the PR one.
Yeah.
I saw a notice of it in one of your Delicious.
Okay.
It's taking the cell phone, talk text into print text.
Yeah.
That's
Gabcast.
On yours, or is, what's it called again?
A Gabcast, or Gcast. I think I was using Gcast for that.
Gcast.
Yeah. If you really want to know...
So that's taking the voice and putting it into text.
Oh, voice to text.
Voice to text.
No, it wasn't voice to text. We could do text to voice. Which one was the one?
We didn't have a fun...
Let's find out.
You were talking on your cell phone, and you...
Jot.com. Well, 15 seconds. They just went to a pay model. It used to be free. You could, well, yeah, okay, we're going to bring everybody else to the same page.
Sorry.
There's a website online. It's called Jot.com, J-O-T-T.com. And what it allows you to do is with your cell phone, and I've done this I don't know how many times, actually raised the master of Jot. You call them up. It's a 1-800 number. You call them up and you say, Jot, and I can send Ray a message or John a message, anybody who has a Jot account, but often, most often I Jot myself. I kind of send myself little messages. So I've got a meeting next week at 4:30 on Tuesday. So we just talked about this now, so I'll call up and I'll say, Jot myself. Meeting on Tuesday with David, 4:30, the MCI. Then it asks me, do you want a reminder? Yes. What day? Sunday. What time? 6 o'clock. Is that AM or PM? PM. Got it. Says no cell phone. And that's it. It's done. Then the message, the words that I spoke, are sent over to Jot, and they're transcribed into text, and they're saved in my Jot account. Now if I have a web blog, in my case I do, so if I've got a blog, I could have Jot. Instead of Jotting myself, I could have Jot to my blog. And then that message would get immediately posted on my blog, the text would be there, and a link to the audio copy of the message I left would be there as well. Now, Jot, when they were starting out, they gave everybody free accounts, and you had, you know, you can make 30-second Jots. Now, you can still get a free account, but your Jots can only be 15 seconds max, so that's really tight. Although, if you want to pay for the service, then you get long. How much time do you get, Ray? Okay. So that's less than $10 a month. Yeah. Absolutely.
So many things to get a Jot. What I do is I have a whole bunch of meetings both in my work, right, my family, and my church work. So I have a bunch of folders, right? So if I had a meeting, let's say it was called a Sunday evening discussion or something like that, right? I can Jot to that. It's a pretty long Jot. Sunday evening. So let's say I'm sitting around during the week and something occurs to me that I want to add to the agenda or to target this specific meeting, right? The thought bubble just comes up and you just grab your phone and you Jot it, and there it is. At the end of the week on a Saturday, you look at maybe about 16 different folders, right? And you look at, I want this to be for that meeting. And these are the thoughts that have occurred to me. These are the things that I need to find out what I need to do. Since I have the premium service, it's directly connected to my Outlook calendar. So if you want a Jot, Outlook calendar, and then it goes in the same process that Darren's describing, and then I can literally watch that. I can watch the thing pop up on my screen. I can watch that event placed in my calendar and synchronize it to my phone, and I've got it there. And you might wonder, you know, is this really useful? Who would go through all this free stuff, right? But let's say if you're driving around in a car or something, you're coming back from the dolphin or whatever it is, and couldn't pull out a BlackBerry if you wanted to, because you know you can't use your thumbs when you're driving, right? And you Jot it and it's there, and it's there for everyone. Have to worry about it. Even in terms of emergency stuff, I mean, think about it. It takes about 2 minutes for the Jot to make its way to Jot and come back to you or whoever it is. I have 87 people in my Jot list, right? They even form groups of them. So if you want, say, 6 people to get your message to you, and create a call or something, and and in 2 minutes, definitely is that an emergency response? You can do that with a critical incident happening. You're building something, you've got 12 different people who are assigned different. They get it. It's amazing.
So you Jot something in that group, does it go into their email? How do they get it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What you do is you open up the folder, right? And you just, very, very simple, you describe them their name, and it'll have their cell number and their email.
So you could, I guess theoretically, add all your students into a group And if you want to make sure that they finish the homework on Sunday.
Are you done yet?
Well, zoom, zoom, zoom. Everybody, make sure you got that assignment first thing Monday morning. See ya.
I'm just spoiled their love affair with a dog.
Yeah. That was all about the house couples.
I saw the potential with some of my students that really have difficulty writing, and a lot of time they're on an adapted education plan, and they're having to, you know, they have to talk to me, and I will scribe for them. And I thought, would this be fantastic for some kids? There are people that have writing blocks, children writing blocks, to get them talking and sharing, and if that could get onto text, I don't know if there's another version of this job that could be used in this form. I don't have cell phones in my classroom. I mean, mine are grade threes. But, I mean, is there a way that could be used that way?
Works from a landline.
Works from a landline as well.
From any telephone.
That might be quite helpful.
You can use it from any telephone.
But what's your time limit on yours? Like the ones
I have 114 bucks a year, I have about 30 seconds. And you can get up to 60 seconds.
Oh. It's not too much time.
Then again, you don't want it to be too long, right? You want that kind of information that's supposed to be terse to the point.
Yeah. I guess what I want is something different.
You're looking for something a little different, longer.
Scribing. Like scribing.
And you know what? I'm sure it exists. And if it doesn't exist,
somebody
check next week.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, that's how fast it changes.
Digital dictation, you
did. Digital dictation, yeah.
Dragon, naturally speaking.
Because apparently, Darren said it goes all the way to India, and somebody listens to it and
that's
how they do it.
Yeah. It goes to India. And when you can say, like, for example, my name is Kirapatwa, right? So when I jot Kirapatwa, the thing goes, what? You know what I mean? So I say Kirapatwa, and then I go Kurapatwa, and it spells it properly. Because the person on the other end listening to the audio file now knows how to spell that word. So if you say an unusual word, you can just spell it.
There's a funny story with that. I have a colleague named Annie, and I was around for a walk, and I'm telling her all about the things. They stole the virtues of this product, and I told her, I've got some calling, and maybe a message, and she was going to know it. So I'm going home, that's what Annie told us, but we want to talk to Annie. Well, hi, Annie, just want to tell you about this job thing, blah, 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 go on. And I get home, send the message, and I get a response. The text message comes to me that I sent, plus the audio message comes to me. So I'm looking at my text message, and it says, hi, honey, I wanted to tell you about this. So I get on my black brand.
Hi, honey.
I'm going to tie it up. Okay, it's gone on rather long. I'm sitting there far too long. Just tell you, if you're interested in all this stuff and kind of its applications in education, this is the K-12 Online Conference. Has anyone ever heard of this? One, two. So the K-12 Online Conference is a conference by teachers for teachers from all over the world, and it's a virtual conference. People create presentations as virtual artifacts, and I'm one of the conveners of the conference. I helped found it. And we are curating that content. We've got 3 years of content now, 2006, 2007, 2008, and all kinds of cool stuff happening in that conference. I won't go into it in too much detail right now, but in the 2007 conference, and I just clicked on the 2007 archive, there was a presentation that was given by Liz Cole in the New Tools strand, which is in yellow, and it's called Cell Phones as Classroom Learning Tools. And this is just one of what is now, we have over 120 different presentations on everything imaginable. And this presentation by Liz Cole is a video file, which you can download to your iPod or listen if you want. You can just listen to the audio only. And I have listened to, it's 1 hour and 10 minutes long. I've listened to that presentation, I don't know how many times. And every time I listen to it, I learn something new. She talked about so many different ways that the cell phone can be turned into a powerful pedagogical tool. And she shares the Gabcast I got from her, a Bcast also I got from Liz. And Liz actually has a website, under supporting links here, Cell Phones for Learning. It's a wiki at Wikispaces. And so this is from the conference site, and it links off to all her stuff. And she's a wonderful lady. You can drop her an email, send her a line. She's happy to answer your question. Get connected with the conference, and someone there will answer whatever questions you might have. And if you really want to kind of dig deep in what's possible with a cell phone, she just published a book. This is a great lady to have in your network. She's on Delicious. I think she's on Digo too, isn't she? Yeah, she's on Delicious. She's on Digo. Liz Cole, K-O-L-B. The lady's fantastic. And knows her stuff better than anybody.
She's just started a podcast called Cell Phone Learning. She does it every week. So a 3-minute podcast for all your
questions. Subscribe to that on iTunes.
Won't find it on iTunes.
No?
She does it on Blog Talk Radio. She has it on the board.
Okay. So you need another podcatcher. We can probably put the link
on her site.
Oh, okay. So, any slick, here's Gapcast, Gcast, Hipcast, CNow, Jot, Private Phone, Free Conference Pro, Utters, Dropbio, and it goes on.
Wow.
It goes on, and this changes almost daily, like what's available. So, I can see something. You're just sipping the Kool-Aid. Anyways, I gotta let you go. I hope I gave you some ideas. I hope you've got some ideas about how maybe you can rework your lessons. I hope it's not too tool-oriented. I really kind of like to keep things focused on the pedagogy. Thanks for coming out. I enjoyed the time we spent together today. I hope you did too. I'll try to get those links up and source resources for you on the wiki by the end of the weekend. Probably Sunday for me is when I'll have it all up. And again, leave me a comment. Email me on my blog. All my contact information is on the wiki, xweb2.pdwiki.com. Take care. Thanks.